Yeah, so you can speak with confidence that knowing that you don't have to be public, if you know what I mean. We might have a few more people arriving in the next few minutes, so that's also going to happen. Yeah, but we'll begin. We'll begin. So my name's Peter Gill. I'm here to share with you this topic that I've entitled "Treasure in Dark Places," and I'll say more about that in a moment.
Yeah, I'll close the video.
Oh, I also forgot to say, I'll mute everyone. Just to make that a bit easy. Well, you might be invited to speak. There might be various places where you can do that. We might use the chat. Everyone's pretty much used to Zoom by now. But I like to begin everything I do with a little bit of arriving in ourselves and a focusing way. And I'll say, if you don't know what focusing is, I'll say what that is too in a minute. So yeah, that's all right. And I'll just guide us into this. It's a completely led experience. You don't have to know anything. So you might take a moment just to get yourself comfortable, find a where your body wants to be. You can have your eyes open, eyes closed, and we'll just spend, yeah, a couple of minutes arriving with ourselves, let's say, arriving with ourselves or in ourselves. So maybe noticing your body and how it's resting on the whatever you're sitting on. And let it be held there. Sometimes we forget to kind of allow our body to let go into the support. So feeling the support behind you, beneath you. And then from there, maybe just noticing the rest of your body. Sometimes I suggest noticing your skin and your clothes. Get a sense of the kind of outline, the edges of your body. So noticing that. Getting a sense of your posture, the space you occupy, and the room you're in. And then maybe with your breath, beginning to notice just inside you right now what's moving in there, what's alive in there, feelings, sensations, the kind of quality of how you are right now. Maybe it feels open and spacious inside right now, or maybe it's full of feelings or worries or concerns or issues from your life. Maybe it's uncomfortable, or maybe you don't know, and all of that is welcome. It doesn't matter how you are. The invitation is to just notice it. What's it like to be in your body right now, or your experience? What's it like? Just noticing or taking a few breaths of curiosity. Curiosity and kind of kind, welcoming. How are you right now? So just take another 30 seconds, a few more breaths. Okay. Bringing that to a close, I thought I'd share a quote with you as we finish that leads us into our topic. The quote is from Eugene Gendlin, the developer of focusing. It's a short quote. He says, no matter how frightening or intractable a problem looks, when it first comes to light, the focuser becomes used to the fact that at the very next shift, it may be quite different. Nothing that feels bad is ever the last step. I'll read it again. No matter how frightening or intractable a problem looks, when it first comes to light, a focuser becomes used to the fact that at the very next shift, it may be quite different. Nothing that feels bad is ever the last step. Like kind of sense of hope with that quote. You may or may not agree with it. That's okay. Sometimes it feels like bad things hang around for longer than we'd like. But certainly in my experience, this rings true. And maybe we'll come back to that quote. But so yeah, welcome to those who've arrived since I began. We've just been arriving in ourselves. So my name is Peter Gill. I'm a teacher of focusing, also a somatic experiencing practitioner. So Peter Levine's method of working with trauma. I also facilitate work in nature and do grief work. I guess my, what is it? I wouldn't call it a mission. Sounds too, my, what I love doing is inviting people to come back home to themselves through the body. And nature is a great facilitator of that. But even just our awareness of our body and what it knows, you know, the wisdom of the body is what I love. I love to share. So that's where I'm coming from. Tonight's topic is all around what the wisdom of the body has to say about dark, difficult places in our life. And I'll say more about what I mean by those in a minute. But I'd like to just quickly check, is there anyone here who's new to focusing? I don't mind if you are, just curious, anyone's completely new to it, or do I need to make a little explanation, one or two? So I'll give a very brief flavor of it. So it's a practice that comes out of philosophy, really, and that got developed in the, I guess, in 60s and 70s. It's about listening to the body, listening to what the body knows, listening to our sense of rightness or a sense of yes that we feel in our body sometimes. Some people call it intuition. I think it connects with intuition or gut feeling. You know, sometimes we just know something's not right or something is right. It's not an intellectual thing. Our body knows something. And sometimes no matter how much we tell ourselves, oh, I feel okay about the situation, everything's okay, our body goes, no, you're not okay. Like when someone asks you, how are you doing? And you go, I'm fine. And you don't feel fine at all. Your body goes, no, you're not fine. You know the difference. So this focusing is pointing to that. And it's really a very human thing. Everyone has some of it, but it can be practiced formally in the sense of something learnt. You can do it on your own. You can do it in partnership with somebody. It's a beautiful practice to work in partnership with. It gets mixed with other things, other approaches, therapy, bodywork, art, creativity, trauma. You know, it's very mixable practice. So what I'm sharing really is insights from that practice in relation to this topic tonight. So I want to say a little bit about what I mean by the title. It's a kind of poetic title, I suppose, like treasure in dark places. What I mean by dark places, I mean there are many, which I pause here. You know, there are many moments in our life that feel dark and difficult. And I don't want to be oversimplistic and say there's always treasure in these really hard times. Sometimes you really don't need to hear that, do you? When you're going through it and somebody says something like, oh, well, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, or you'll learn something from it in the end. So I'm wanting to be a bit wary of that kind of overly simplistic idea. But what I have discovered over 15 years of focusing is that if I turn my attention towards what is stuck, what is difficult, what something in me would rather not go towards, what I avoid, If I turn my attention to that in a compassionate, embodied way, things change. Shifts happen. Big shifts, big changes. It doesn't always make it all okay. Like, you know, like take bereavement. It's a very difficult experience to go through. So focusing isn't like, hey, I'll make it all okay. But it does bring a different way of being with it, for example. But I wonder, particularly the dark kind of places I want to speak about tonight are, well, I'll show you a symbol of what I mean by this. This is my symbol. So it's all tangled up, literally. So this is a kind of symbol of a situation in your life, very tangled, stuck, like no clear way in and out of it. It's just a bit of a mess or a bit like a tangle. This is called a tangle. So this is a kind of place I'm talking about tonight. How, when we have this something like this in our life, tangled and difficult and stuck. This kind of place could be a place of avoidance, something in your life you move around all the time. Maybe you've got a place in your house that's never ever gets sorted out, or a relationship that's difficult, continually dysfunctional that you never attend to, or some dream you never you aspire to but never make any moves towards. Or it could be something more like compulsion and always constantly looking at our phone or checking Facebook or playing computer games or going to the fridge, or we're kind of caught in this compulsive cycle and giving ourselves a hard time about it 5 minutes later or the next day. You know, it's a kind of tangle, repetitive, it never gets anywhere. So repetitive life situations, beliefs we have about ourselves, I'm worthless. And these are all kinds of tangles. So they're sort of stuck situations, really, stuck situations. So I want to pause there and just check if that so much so far makes sense, what I'm talking about. Anyone recognize one of these? Yeah. So here's a question, a little inquiry for you. What makes it hard for you to be curious about these sort of stuck situations? It might need a while to feel into that question. What makes it hard for you to approach something that's really stuck and difficult? Say some avoidance or some compulsion or some... What makes it hard to approach it? And I'd love to hear from anyone. What answer comes there? Please unmute yourself if you want to speak, Catherine.
Well, I think sometimes you feel that it might make it worse. You know, somehow you'll end up in the middle of the tangle, and it's hard to kind of stay on the edge, vaguely, well, sort of looking in, really. That's right.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much. So it might make it worse. That's right. And you all get more entangled, and you fall in or something into it. Is that what you mean?
Mm.
Yeah. Thanks, Catherine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry, for me, it's a feeling of it'll never change.
Yeah, right.
That's the point, you know, sure. I can never stick to it.
Okay, thank you. I'm writing these down just in case I need to refer to it, but it'll never change.
Never change, yeah.
Thank you, yeah.
For me, it's a similar feeling, like I cannot imagine a positive outcome of the situation.
Okay. So you can't imagine a positive outcome.
It feels like it's unsolvable.
Yeah, right. Okay, great. Sorry, I don't mean that great. Not celebrating your one. I mean, it chimes with my experience exactly. Yeah. It feels unsolvable.
Unsolvable.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Yeah. Someone else, was it Colin was going to say something?
Yeah, I would say the sense I get is overwhelmed, but not just about a general sense, a sense that you feel very small in the midst of a vast kind of unsolvable quagmire, if that's the right word to use.
Yeah, right. So overwhelmed or small in the midst of a kind of quagmire. I mean, the quagmire is a great expression. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
carry on. Yeah, it's Jimmy, go for it.
Yeah, a bit like that, that actually that it would, that if I kind of open up something, that actually it'll manifest physically, and that I'll start crying, or my face will go red, or and actually it's the fear of that physical kind of reaction.
Great. Okay, fear of like a physical reaction, like whatever that might be. It might be tears, or it might be going red, or something.
Yeah.
You might feel really bad. Some people really. One couple more. Who's speaking? I can't see now. Is it Janie?
Oh yeah. Something for me about just coming up against something so familiar responses. I just get familiar responses to something, and it's like I just think, oh shit, I can't be bothered. You know, I can't be bothered to go there.
Yeah, can't be bothered. Let's have it. Yeah, because it's kind of familiar. It's funny, isn't it? It's familiar. But we can't be bothered. Like, oh, not this again. That sort of feeling. Yeah.
Mine's about not really wanting to spend the time and not quite really having the tools.
Yeah.
What to do with it. Like most other people have said, just ending up in a mess.
So
just don't go near it because I don't quite know what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah, that's fair enough, isn't it? I get it. Like, who would want to enter a horrible tangle if we don't have any tools to get out? And yeah, I get it. Thank you. Was there one person more going to speak? Was that? Marianne. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. For me, there's always something in the tangle itself that also doesn't want to get
around. Thank you. So something almost like in there, invested in you, not. Keeps you at bay or something like that. So it doesn't want to be sort of untangled. Great. That really we'll see more clearly that in a minute, how that's also true. Yeah, thank you so much. That's great, really helpful to get that. Okay,
there's one more person.
Who's that? Oh, great. Sorry.
Considering, there's something for me that's linked to repressed memory. So having the physical symptoms and anxiety, but actually not being able to reach the memory.
Yeah. Something about that. Repressed. So it sounds like you have a sense there's something in there, like a memory, but you can't reach it. Does that describe it? Yeah, that's right. All you get is the physical symptoms.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Our body sometimes can be tricky like that. It tells us something is wrong or not okay, but it's hard to make a further step with it unless we know how. That's right. Thank you. So I want to pause just a momentarily share something with you around a skill from focusing. And then I want to look a little bit about what happens in these tangles. But the skill I want to share is something about our how we might have. I'm going to give an example. Let's say we're scared of this part of our life, scared or worried. We don't want to go there because it might make it worse, or we'll have bad feelings, or we'll get overwhelmed, or we'll discover something terrible inside, you know, those kinds of. But I'm going to put all that under the umbrella of scared, some feeling of scared. So I'm going to lead us in a little reflective moment of it. Just I want you to take in these two sentences, and I'm going to say it two different ways around being scared, and see if you notice a difference. So all you need to do is kind of be guided through this. Really, it's just a little pausing moment. And maybe that word doesn't fit, but I think you'll get the idea as you do it. So just pausing, take a breath or two, just reconnect with your body. And sense for the difference. So I'm going to say it this way. I'm scared of it being too much. I'm scared of it being too much. Or I'm scared of what I'll find, or either of those. And let just sort of feel the quality of the words, and then pausing. And then hearing it this way, something in me is scared of it being too much. Something in me is scared. I'll be overwhelmed. And notice the difference. Something in me So our movement from I'm scared to something in me feels scared. And yeah, see if in hearing it or imagining or sensing it, if you notice a difference there, I'd be curious to know what you've, if you sensed any difference. It's okay if you didn't, of course. Can you hear a difference between those two sentences?
It kind of takes the charge out of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, like that. That's a great expression, isn't it? Yeah.
It makes me more likely to want to look at it.
That's right. Yeah, right. Keeps a bit of
back off.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly. It makes it a space so we can back off, more likely to look at it. It takes a little bit of the charge off of it, exactly. Thank you. Anyone else want to share something?
I got a there was
question. Sorry, got two people at once. Do you want to go first, Svetlana?
Yeah, I got that feeling of compassion, of something in me, because that was just, there's still this protective bit, but it's not the whole picture.
Yeah, okay, exactly. So some compassion came for that kind of protective thing there.
Yeah.
Fine. And who else is someone else speaking? Was it Colin?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Karen, yeah.
I got the sense that something definitely flagged up curiosity.
Oh, yeah.
I was curious about that something, but in a quite a gentle kind of okay, kind of way.
Yeah. So just like a bit of curiosity came with saying it differently, yeah. Okay, great, yeah. I've got room for one or two more people to speak. I'm just going to put the sentence in the chat. I feel scared. Something in me.
I mean, there was a huge difference. So when I said, I feel scared, I was kind of almost right in there with the tangle.
Right.
And then when I said something in me, I literally had the feeling of almost going up in an elevator onto a different floor and looking down on what was going on.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's a real sense of almost like zooming out from it and being
above
it.
Zooming out.
Thanks. Yeah.
I felt gratitude. When I sensed in the first one, I felt gratitude that it rang true. I am afraid in my
head. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The gratitude that there was an I.
Ah,
my whole being is together to be with this too much.
There's yeah.
A sense of
okay.
Because I used to identify with the second one, but now the second one was no.
Oh, yeah. That's there we go. Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. I like it. I mean, in fact, the sentence goes on. Oh, wait, I say the sentence. But there's the way it begins to form is I'm noticing this scared feeling, or like there is a you to be with the scared feeling. And you're saying the first sentence fitted better for you. Like, I'm scared, it's too much. Yeah. Oh, you're muted, Anne. Can you unmute yourself? Sorry.
I am noticing doesn't fit. What fits is I am.
I am, exactly.
The I am of Jesus. I am light.
Yeah. Yeah.
the okay, whole cool. I am is this right now.
Yeah. So the I in that sense is a big sense of I. I mean, these are my words, but like a, yeah. Thank you. And it's really wonderful when something doesn't fit. This is a great example of focusing. You know, when someone says, oh, you know, and it happens in everyday life, doesn't it? Someone says, oh, you must feel so-and-so. And you go, no, I don't. That's not right for me. That's because your body knows. And that's a great knowing to have. Essential. So great. Thanks for sharing that. So this is a tool. I just want to pause here, and this way of languaging it may or may not work for you, but the idea is it helps us to create a bit of space, if you like, between us and what we're feeling, which can sometimes be very helpful when we're entangled in something. We don't need it all the time, but it can be supportive because we're no longer so... I guess because we can really listen. For me, what it engenders is a kind of listening. It means I can listen to all the different parts of this, and we'll see those in a minute, without being identified with the part of me that's scared of it or some part of me that's critical of it. We also have to have, you know, we also like, I shouldn't be like this. It's terrible having this kind of thing. We can be judging, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what it makes it hard is to really get to listen. Do you see what I'm saying? If you're judgmental and critical about an experience, it's very hard to listen to it. And listening brings change. This is the sort of theory here. When we deeply listen to what's in here in an embodied way, something changes. So that's, yeah, sharing a tool from focusing that I cover on all my courses, and many other focusing teachers do. It's called facilitative language. You facilitate listening, facilitate a relationship. It's only one piece of the whole focusing puzzle, but I thought I'd just share it here. I wanted to share now, though, just which is a bit of a map of this kind of part, this kind of thing in our life. And this map comes from the work of Anne Weiser Cornell and Barbara McGavin, the two focusing teachers I've been studying for many years. I'll put their names in the chat. Their work, they now call it Untangling. And it's really about taking the skills of focusing and listening to your body into these difficult territories that need a bit of extra attention. And what they discovered in that process, and what I've discovered in my own following of that route, it's a very experiential process, it's not theoretical, is that every tangle has a kind of structure, for want of a better word, some kind of pattern that kind of for everybody seems to have. And the heart of every tangle is something called like a stopped process. That sounds like a weird word, perhaps. Stopped process. At the heart of every tangle is some kind of stopped process, some kind of movement in our being that couldn't take place. Trauma is a great example of this. You know, trauma is a kind of unresolved experience in our body. Like something should have happened that couldn't. We couldn't fight. We couldn't flight. We couldn't resolve it. It's like it's a very particular kind of stuck experience, but it's only one of many, you know. So it's like the kind of living force of our life gets stuck. So at the heart of every tangle is some kind of stopped process. It's just painful in some way or another. It's painful. So that's at the heart of it. So I'm kind of coming outside in. This is a bit of theory. So I'll give you the theory and we'll pause. So the heart of every process heart of every stuck place is a stop process. Some kind of stoppage, what Gentling called it. And because that's unmanageable or unbearable or because we haven't the resources to deal with it, maybe because we're too small, because often these things happen when we're younger, but also because we just don't have the resources even as a grown up. People are traumatized and can't manage. Because that's hard to manage, other parts of us get on board. They come into being to protect us from that difficult feeling. Somebody else mentioned that word earlier on. There's a kind of protective set of beings come on board to try and manage it. Like, come on, like, we won't feel it again, and we'll kind of numb you out because it's too difficult to have, or we'll keep it secret because nobody, if it's too shameful to share, or, you know, we get this kind of layer of protection around difficult experience, which is really welcome. You know, so not, all of this is welcome in the sense of none of it is bad. It might be difficult to be with and sense, but it's none of this is like, oh, it shouldn't be like this way. So here's a stuck process. I've got a stone. It's a stone. And then because a stone is painful and we don't want to feel it or something, or this is too hard to deal with, you know, we kind of end up with a protector. This is an animal. I don't know why I've got this, but it's like covers it up, tries to protect it, like moves around, like, you won't feel this ever again, or we'll never have that again, or never show that to anyone. Or, there's lots of variations of this, but some kind of protection. So that's, but we're still not, this is only one partially through. What then happens is, because this doesn't really work, because it's hard, really, the only thing that can really solve it is what is the river of experience inside there. The part of us that got stuck is the only one that's got really the solution. Because this doesn't work, the protection, ultimately, temporarily it helps, perhaps. But because it doesn't work, other parts of us then get, a third kind of part comes, which gets a bit judgmental and critical. So this is the judge and the critics and the other kinds of, because it's sort of unmanaged, but still unmanageable, really. So we get other parts that go, no, this should be over by now, or don't be so stupid, or you shouldn't try and numb yourself, it's terrible. You shouldn't be drinking, or you shouldn't be going to the fridge. Or so we end up with a tangle, you know, a tangle of different parts, all of which at the center is trying to manage what is a very painful situation that we don't have the resources to deal with. So it's like a lot of management. If you ever spend time around, anyone in a family, yeah, I know we're all in families, but if you ever sort of, I notice this actually living in my actual family sometimes, you know, where we might have a family gathering and somebody, like my son hurts himself and half the people are like, no, it's all right, really, it's fine. And other people are panicking, and then there's other people criticizing other people for that. You know, it becomes this mess around tangle, very lived out. It gets very lived out in families, this kind of situation. So anyway, I'll just recap. So we've got a painful process, a protective mechanism that really doesn't work in the long term. And then we have parts that try and manage it all that also don't work. So none of these really bring resolution, this sort of, because none of them really are listening to what's happening here. They're all kind of ways, strategies to manage. And every one of these parts wants to be heard and can be transformed. Every one of these parts has got a treasure for us, or some kind of wisdom, or some kind of knowing, or the process of listening to them will bring that. So I'm going to pause there. That's kind of a blob of theory. I just wanted to, I don't know, just check it, make some kind of sense, even intuitively. If it doesn't, don't worry. But yeah, just questions a little bit about that. Another way of putting all this is, all parts of you are trying to save your life, all parts of you, the protective parts, the critical parts, in their own weird way, in their own inner way, are trying to save your life. They're trying to manage impossible situations. And they need to be welcomed for change to happen. So yeah, let's pause there for any questions, clarifications. Especially, I wanted to check it makes some kind of sense. If it isn't clear, I'm very happy to say a bit more.
It makes intuitive sense to me.
I like it. Yeah. Some kind of intuitive sense.
It does make some kind of intuitive sense.
Yeah.
I suppose there's a slight part of me that's jumping ahead and thinking, but some situations are impossible.
Yeah, oh yeah,
and,
right.
And
yeah. That is also true, yeah. Sorry, Gary.
Right. I haven't really gotten beyond that.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So it makes some kind of intuitive sense, and then another part of me is thinking, and there are some situations that are, or at least seem almost impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing to dwell on a bit. Like, is it really, you know, any situation we have in our life that's stuck? Mm. Is it as stuck as we think it is?
Yeah.
I mean, or impossible. And sometimes it is. I mean, I'm thinking of death, you know, bereavement. You know, like in a way, there's an impossible there. Like, we can't reach that person again or whatever. But, so there's a sort of truth there that can't be, is a different kind of impossible than what we're talking about here. Maybe that's not what you're speaking about, but I think sometimes it seems impossible, but let's be curious. That's what I would always say. What's happening in there? It seems really stuck. Yeah. Sorry.
What resonates for me is not so much that a stuck place would necessarily be at the center, but having a sense of the body, a tightness, like a protectiveness.
Uh-huh.
The other day I noticed it because I had a headache. And then I noticed that there was like an echo of the headache in my gut.
Yeah, right.
And it's somehow reinforcing the headache.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's a tangle, but I don't know that it was a stuck place in a way, but it's the body tightening, limiting what we can do.
That's right. Yeah. So even, it may or may not have been this kind of situation, but you notice how the body sort of tightened and around it somehow. Is that what you're saying? So it's kind of like the protective way it does that. Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of natural in a way. Like it makes sense, doesn't it? That we would contract and protect around something that's painful because we don't have a way of feeling it yet or meeting it. Yeah, carry on. Someone else is going to speak.
Peter,
yeah.
Sorry, just trying to understand the connection between focusing and because I'm particularly interested in Gestalt therapy.
That's right.
Theory of change.
That's right.
And the idea that you ease the purpose of focusing in the sense, say, even if it's impossible, I would just focus on the feeling of the impossibility without, and we see what happens when we go there.
Mm.
Focusing to say, let's move away from that.
No, I would. Well, my understanding and experience of focusing is, I find a way to move towards it,
okay.
and be curious about it. So I don't take it at face value, and that might be quite a journey, you know, even to get to that point of. But eventually, it's like I'll be curious about this really stuck situation. And what I'm thinking it's impossible. We'll never resolve this. And I'll see what my body knows about it. I wonder, but what's the feeling? Like you say, what's that feel like? Impossible. What does my body? So rather than thinking it's impossible, like what does my body know about it? And there's often a different feeling when we go to that level, the feeling body level. There's a different quality. That's what I can say. I don't know. I don't know about you, but I spent years trying to think myself out of situations. Think myself into. All I need to do is get the right sort of thought or analysis of what's happening, and then I'll feel better. And that didn't work. Well, generally, I mean, I got a little bit of relief sometimes. If that, you know, like there's nothing completely. Like, I wouldn't say cognitive understanding is pointless. Like it's got its place, but. Something inside didn't feel better. I still felt anxious. I still felt like I was worthless. Like, the only thing that really got to that was this process where I really went to meet that part of me. And this is really one of these stop processes. A younger part of me that came to feel it was worthless because of the situation it was in. It's only when I really went there and met it over and over, actually, really heard it, really gave it empathy, listened to it. Yeah, this is what it's like for you. This is. With a lot of compassion, really went there, that changed. You know, I used to feel that quite a lot, and I hardly ever feel it now. I mean, I can't remember the last time I felt it. So that's an example of a transformation in myself. But I mean, I have other troubles. Please don't think I've fixed it all. But that particular one has softened considerably. Any other? Yeah. So thanks, Luca. Good question. Any other questions that come out of anything I've said? Hi.
Peter, so is the critical voice critical about the protective behavior? Is it also, or is it critical of the original pain?
Oh, yeah, it could be both. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be both.
Yeah. Is it, exactly. Yeah. It could be, I mean, what I gave is a very broad summary of the whole process. But yeah, we get different kinds of critical parts in this model. And they have different things to be critical about, but it could be either of those. I like to think of them as managers rather than critical. I mean, they're not even always critical, but they're trying to sort of manage a situation through a lot of words. Oh, you shouldn't do this, or you should do this. Or even, you know, this is really strange. Even everybody else drinks now and again. Everybody else watches Netflix. This is my thing. Everyone else watches Netflix. Oh, fine. And I'll do it. I'll watch 7 episodes and stay up until 3 in the morning. Like, it's like a, it's not a critical, but it's sure not, it's surely the objective. it's kind of trying to manage the situation. It's funny. And we go into a lot into this in my course, different kinds of parts. So I'm going to move us on and just say a little bit about what I mean by treasure, share a little bit about the treasures. And I suppose I want to speak from my own experience here, what I've discovered or the benefits I've gained from focusing on these troubled places. So the first one would be a lot more freedom from that process of inner criticism, you know, those kind of parts that you're useless at this, you're terrible, you're so pathetic. Everybody hates you. You're such a terrible parent. I have that one still. But a lot of the other ones, either don't come so often or I'm able to meet them. Go, oh, okay, right, hi. I can befriend them. I've befriended these parts of me that get worried and scared and edgy and shouty. Critical parts are generally scared and worried. So we can, I've learned to turn towards them and not banish them away. That's been such a gift, actually. So much less critical in our environment, much more compassion. So that's one thing. The other thing I would mention is, I guess, a kind of healing from deep empathy, giving parts of myself, like I mentioned with that example, something in me feels worthless, this part of me. Like really hearing it and hearing it, what it was underneath, in a way, why it felt that, what it was sad about. It's funny, you might think, oh, what's the point in going there? Because I can't change a situation. I can't change my history. I can't change my family history. Why would I even bother listening? You might even ask that question. Why would I bother listening? But listening heals. Even if there's nothing you can do, listening does heal. I've no doubt about this. I remember reading this passage from this book about this indigenous culture in Guatemala, and the elders of this village, you know, they have regular meetings where people come and get to say what's troubling them, you know, so they invite it, and people would be, you know, and they know, this guy said, well, the elders know they can't do anything about it, in a way, many of them, but because everybody gets to hear the troubles, somehow that brings healing. We all know that so-and-so in that part of the village is really struggling because their grandmother died and their crops aren't growing, or someone else is struggling with an illness or something. But because it's shared and because it's lived and listened to, everybody gets to participate somehow. So I think, Liz, don't underestimate the power of listening. So yeah, I've gotten a lot of relief by listening to parts of myself that are, you know, at the kind of heart of these tangles. Often around grief, but more than that. So that's a kind of treasure. You know, deep empathy is a kind of treasure. And then a kind of wisdom. There's some kind of wisdom that comes from this process. And I'm seeing if I can find an example. I guess, you know, like getting in contact with those younger parts of me, there's a real sense of like they know something about the situation, about the pain and the difficulty I was in that I didn't know cognitively. It's like they have a bit of the story. And when you hear the story, there's such a kind of relief. You go, oh, no wonder. Like, oh, right. Okay, no wonder you really feel that way. There's a kind of insight and wisdom that comes, like compassionate insight. I don't know, that's my word for it. I just made up compassionate insight that comes from that deep listening. You really get it. You know, you really get it why things are the way they are inside. Bert Hellinger, the developer of constellation work, some of you might be familiar with that, talked about the truth calms. Lovely phrase, the truth calms. So when you hear the truth, something in your whole system kind of goes, like it's a relief when you really hear what's at the heart of a trouble. Yeah, maybe that's enough. Yeah, some treasures. There's some treasures that I wanted to share with you. And they're not something that has come because I wanted them to happen or like forced them. They weren't. This is a very organic process. Focusing is a very organic process. It's not like a kind of you do steps 1, 2, 3 and you always get number 4. It's not as simple as that. Sometimes they take a long time of hanging around with difficult parts of us, difficult places, you know. Having a little bit of courage to lean into what's uncomfortable. I go, okay, this is hard, but I'm going to stay here a little bit. I'm going to be curious. But over time, you know, over time we kind of circulate around and into this tangled part, and it opens, it becomes untangled. It transforms. So yeah, let's pause there for a moment. And to welcome questions or anything, comments.
My experience with focusing is the way I would put treasure is that in the convoluted way that you describe, little by little, one develops a sense of respect
for what
human being is.
Nice, I love that. Thank you. So little by little, a sense of respect for, that is, you say, for what a human being is. Yeah, definitely.
I'm really getting the last thing you said, Peter, was can I hang around? Can I stay here for a bit? And I feel that's a real challenge for me. Can I just allow, can I invite whatever needs to come in? Can I give myself space? Can I be kind, compassionate enough? You know, because I want to know, there's just this impatient Janie inside just right. Wanting to race to the, you know, to the end of the storybook or, you know.
Yeah. I can really relate to that. Yeah. Mm.
So that's really helpful.
Thanks. Yeah, and that part of you that is impatient and wants to race to the end. And I have something similar. Like, I want to know, because I know when I get to the end, I've experienced it, so I want to get there quickly, because it's good. I'm like, but if I run the process from that part of myself, identified with that kind of narrow, I'm going to get to the end, it doesn't work. I need to be the bigger part, bigger me, you know. So I kind of turn to that part of me that wants to get to the end. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I really hear you. You want this resolved. Yeah. So often it's like, it wants a resolution. It wants to, and we give that company and empathy. So there's nothing even, or if we're scared of going there, we give that place some empathy. If we're scared of going towards our tangle, if you're like, I never want to go there ever. Okay, right. Some part of me doesn't want to do that. Let's keep company with that. It's a great thing about this process is you can always do something because there's always somewhere to start, even if you hate the whole thing. I would never want to feel this thing ever again. Oh, right. Something in me doesn't want to go there. It gives me a place to start. Yeah. So we're funny bunch of humans. We have all sorts of different parts, and I want to say focusing welcomes everything, you know, contradictory parts. I don't want to just for some reason say that here, like sometimes we think we should just feel one thing. But we can feel two things at the same time, even opposites. Like, I love this member of my family and something in me hates them at the same time. I was so furious, you know. Both. It can make room for both. Okay. Anything else? So maybe I want to say here as a, you know, well, maybe start with that quote, really. No matter how frightening or intractable a problem looks, when it first comes to light, a focuser becomes used to the fact that the very next shift may be quite different. So this is something I really, want to underline, like, and I'll put it in my words would be, you can be just be curious about what's happening in the moment. And if you can't be curious about that. What's why it's hard. That's okay. Be curious about that. Sometimes these difficult and old problems are like rooms in our house. We never look in. You know, we've all got cupboards and drawers and rooms like that. Chuck all the stuff we don't want in it. Stuff to the gills. And you open the door. Oh, I don't want to deal with that. No air. You keep it. It's all airless. There's nothing in there. But surprising, you know, what kind of shift can come, even if you just open the door for like 5 seconds and go, oh, what's in there? Freshly, you know, what's going on then? Like some movement happens in a stuck place just through noticing. Okay, so I want to just say a little bit about the course I've got coming up. And I offer twice a year because it really goes into this. So it's called Untangling the Knots. It's a course for people who know focusing, even just the basics. It's a 12-week course. It's like I call it a deep dive into focusing. So it's a kind of closed group. We meet over 12 weeks, a gap in the middle, 2.5 hours, I think, or 2.25 hours each week. And it's really going into this much more in detail. The first few weeks is gathering some tools around compassion, around sensing fully, around finding symbols. So like we've developed some tools, and then the next few weeks is around the different kinds of parts we meet. We look in detail at the critical parts. And then we kind of explore different aspects of those territory, avoidance and grief. And so some of the kind of things that come from that. And then we look at next steps, you know, how you can take, how your body can show you next steps and move forward movement. So it's a very rich course. Taught it through 4 times now. So that begins on March the 2nd, so a couple of weeks' time, more or less. It's an evening course. And there's also one in the mornings later in the year. So if you can't do an evening one, you can do a morning one. The details are on my website. I'll send you that anyway. But I just, thought I'd mention that. But if you're new to focusing, you know, you might want to also learn a bit of focusing first. You have to do that to join the course anyway. Maybe some interest has come from that. So feel free to look that up. I'll send some links about how to find out more about focusing also. Any questions that come now that before we conclude? Hi.
Can I just clarify the difference between focusing and somatic experiencing? Right in thinking that somatic experiencing is specifically around trauma, where focusing can be, you know, a whole range of things?
That is one difference, definitely, because that's one way I describe it. Generally speaking, somatic experiencing is around resolving the sort of symptoms or physiology around trauma, unresolved trauma. So it has a lot of detail and precision around that, around the physiology of trauma, around the nervous system, around different interventions. But it's still based in the body, you know, they're both, so they overlap in that way. It's all about listening and curiosity in the body, but then where it goes is a bit different. But this really is a bit of a mix, you know, the, what I'm offering this course, and it's because often at the heart of these tangles is something that might, it might be classified as trauma, wherever you define that, but some kind of overwhelm or difficult experience, which every human being has in some way. So these are tools that are developed out of a kind of meeting of those, not SE, not somatic experiencing and focusing, but kind of really difficult places and focusing. So there is a little bit of crossover, and I bring a little, some of the tools from my SE training into the course as well. But yeah, it's definitely a focusing course. Yeah, but that difference is, describes it well, what you said.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything more? Good. All right. So thank you, everyone, for showing up. Thanks for your questions, really rich questions. If anyone wants to ask more, please get in touch. I'll send, you can email me or contact me, and I'll get back to you. Other than that, we'll leave it there for today. And if you like, if you want to unmute yourself, say goodbye, feel free to do that.